to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Greta Anderson, together with my co-host, Susan Franzen. It is Local Talk Wednesdays when we talk about issues in our rural communities and highlight people there. Later in the show, we'll have some stories about community theater in the surrounding communities outside of Ames. And we will also have a visit from two special folks to KHOI, the comedians Tom and Doug. Tom does not normally live in Ames. He's the co-host of the Tom and Doug show. They produce sort of by distance, and Tom is going to be here in town. He is in town today because of an event planned for this weekend. Tom and Doug and Clark Ford will be presenting Laugh Out Loud. We heard a little bit about that last Wednesday. We're going to hear some more and greet Tom from wherever he hails from. Not sure about that. And so we'll have some laughs at the end of the show. Looking forward to that. For now, though, we have an issue that affects rural women, and this concerns a piece of legislation that has come to the fore. As you know, the Iowa legislature is in session, and as we've discussed, we're in a situation in which Republicans control both houses of Congress as well as the governor's office and are considering bills that would never get traction in a situation in which power was divided with Democrats. One of those bills, Senate File 2, has stirred up a lot of controversy recently and is the topic of our first segment. This bill has been described as defunding Planned Parenthood, which operates 12 clinics around the state. Republican Senator Amy Sinclair, the bill's spokesperson, says that the bill would increase rural women's access to family planning services. What Senate File 2 does is this. By placing a ban on Planned Parenthood for receiving state money for family planning services, such as contraceptive counseling and prescription, it makes the state ineligible for $3 million annually in federal Medicaid funding, what is known as the Iowa Family Planning Network Program. It then promises, this bill, to create a state-run and state-funded program to replace it. Janet Peterson from Northwest Des Moines is a senator on the committee where this bill was introduced, and she has scrutinized it in detail. I had the chance to speak with her earlier this week. It's known in common parlance as defunding Planned Parenthood. Is that an accurate description of what this bill does?
Well, that is the term that they've used to describe the bill, but what I would say is it's a bill that guts Iowa's family planning network, because not only would it defund Planned Parenthood, it would also not allow women to see any provider that works for a company that provides legal abortion services. That would be University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, and it would also include Unity Point. So any doctor, physician, perinatologist associated with those organizations would not be able to provide family planning care to Iowa women. And I did get a letter from the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists from Iowa and the American College of Nurse Midwives in complete opposition to Senate File 2. They start their letter by saying, as healthcare professionals serving women, girls, and families in our state, we write in opposition to Senate File 2 as dangerous and ill-advised. Senate File 2 would end Iowa's family planning program and replace it with one that denies funding to many of our state's qualified family planning providers and clinics, depriving Iowa women of critical preventative care services ranging from family planning to cancer screening. They would go on to talk in their letter that Iowa already has the fewest OBGYNs per capita of any state, and Senate File 2 would exacerbate the access problems we have in our state.
Okay, and there's money involved as well, because Medicaid funding was paying for this the family planning network that we currently have, up to 90%. $3 million is what I've heard.
Right. the Iowa Family Planning Network started in 2006. It served more than 80,000 Iowa women. It's a great program, a great benefit to Iowa taxpayers, because for every 10 cents that Iowa taxpayers put into the program, the federal government gives us 90 cents. So we've been able to provide more than $3 million worth of care to Iowa women at a cost to taxpayers of around roughly $300,000. Now, if Senate File 2 passes, what will happen, it is saying that the state no longer will accept federal funds, and any type of program that the Republicans want to put in place for Iowa women's health care will be paid 100% by Iowa taxpayers. Now, the other thing that's important to note about this bill is there is not one dime of funding in the bill. The other thing to note is if we were to have a health care emergency in our state, say the Zika virus, say Obamacare is repealed and thousands of Iowa women no longer have family planning, the family planning network that we have in place right now would cover those women. Now, if we go to a state-run plan, that is not clear because they would cap the amount of money. So it'd be like first come, first serve, birth control, pap smears, any type of screening program that a woman participates in. And actually, it also services men for healthcare needs as well.
There's talk about community health centers and the role that they will play in the place of Planned Parenthood. Can you talk a bit more about those community health centers? Are they equipped? Are they capable of taking the place of Planned Parenthood?
No one that has sponsored the bill is sponsored by 29 Senate Republicans, and no one has yet to be able to explain what their new three-tier system approach is, and how a woman will know what type of provider that they can access as part of the program. Anyone right now under the existing Iowa Family Planning Network, anyone who provides Medicaid services could be eligible to participate in the Iowa Family Planning Network. That will all change if this program gets gutted, because the state-run program will set the requirements for who can and cannot participate. And I would also say, I think we need to make sure Iowans realize that the Iowa Family Planning Network has never funded abortions. In fact, it's helped prevent abortion in our state. It's also reduced Medicaid costs for deliveries and birth and first years of life. They've gone down by $345 million since Iowa implemented this program back in 2006. A study by the University of Iowa Public Policy Center in May of 2016 showed very conservative estimates of net Medicaid savings of more than $265 million because of this program. And their study revealed Iowa taxpayers saved nearly $3.40 for every dollar that was invested in the Iowa Family Planning Network.
And that is Janet Peterson, a senator from Northwest Des Moines. She's on the Judiciary Committee where this bill was introduced. A link to that University of Iowa Public Policy Planning Center study that she cited will be available on our KHOI website when we post the show. And there is a lot of good information at the top of that study explaining exactly what the Iowa Family Planning Network does. Senator Janet Peterson was the lone Democrat on the three-member subcommittee that moved the bill forward last week, casting, as you can imagine, a no vote. At the end of our conversation, she described the very unusual way the bill has proceeded.
Well, I've served in the legislature for 17 years. When we had the subcommittee last week, it was the first time in my legislative career where a bill was rushed through a 25-minute subcommittee, not allowing. There were hundreds of people here who had come to speak, and they weren't allowed to have their voices heard. Not only that, the woman who was running the subcommittee didn't allot time for senators to be able to ask questions about the bill or make any statements regarding the bill. So there's really a strong effort among the 29 senators to push this bill through before Iowans truly realize the implications it has for women's health care.
So you witnessed people at the doors. What did it look like?
I've never seen the Capitol so jammed with people. We had people who came to speak on the bill, filling the staircases all the way from the basement to the third floor. of the State House and the entire back of the Senate chamber leading up to Room 22. And Room 22, where we held our meeting, was jam-packed with people. It was standing room only. In fact, if the fire marshal saw how many people were there, we probably would have had ourselves in trouble.
And that was last week, Janet Peterson describing the scene at the subcommittee hearing. And then yesterday, there was the full committee hearing. Virginia Stropinski went down there, and she will be with us later to talk about what she experienced yesterday at the full committee hearing. Now, over the weekend, the League of Women Voters held a legislative wake-up forum locally here in Nevada, Iowa, inviting legislators to address the public's questions regarding any of the bills being introduced in the State House this session. Bill Dix, the Republican senator representing District 5, which includes Nevada as well as Story City and Eldora, did not respond to the League's invitation and did not attend the forum. So he was not present to answer any of those questions that people might have had. As a Republican senator, he was one of the 29 co-sponsors of the bill. His Republican colleague in the House, Dave Dio, also representing Nevada, was there. And you can hear in this response to Ames resident Jody O'Donnell's question regarding Senate File 2, his own confusion about what the bill would do to help rural and small-town Iowa women. In this clip from the League of Women Voters Legislative Forum, you will also hear the voices of Ames Democratic Representative Lisa Heddens and Democratic Senator Herman Kernbach. Here's Jody O'Donnell posing the question.
Hi, I'm Jody O'Donnell. I'm from Ames. And I'm here today because I think Representative Dale, you said that we're going to be cutting about $117 million. So I want to ask him specifically about SF2. That's the one that eliminates the Medicaid family planning waiver. We would be turning down about $2.7 million. It's a 9-to-1 match from the federal government. That money then would have to come out of our pockets. What's broken about that particular program that we would be turning down money when we're having to cut $117 million and potentially taking it from other kinds of services, especially in human services that, as Lisa mentioned, we can't afford to cut?
Well, first of all, let me make clear that we're not quite talking apples to apples here, because the $117 million cut is in the current year budget. So that's basically to adjust the spending to the revenues for the current year. What you're talking about would be looking forward into 18.
And we can afford to cut $3 million from the next budget? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying is that the numbers are different, because going forward there is some new revenue, we're not necessarily going to have cuts in the fiscal year 18 budget, because...
But I'm just curious, what's broken about this program that we're going to go to one that's state-run that's going to cost us more money? What's broken about this program?
I'll tell you what, the thing for my district, when I'm looking at where the money is spent in my district, and what you're talking about is services for people such as birth control pills and things like that. In my district, you're talking about forcing people to go to Des Moines to get those services. When you look at where those services would be provided under the plan that Republicans are doing right now in the Senate, and I haven't had a chance to look that closely at the bill, but my understanding is that Zering would be one of the locations, Ames, and probably Iowa Falls. So it's for the people in the north part of my district. Zering is literally right in the middle of my district. So people would actually be able to go and access services much closer to home than they can now. And so for my constituents, I think it's a plus. So that, I guess that's my main answer on that issue, is that I'm looking at being able to provide services to people right in my district rather than having to travel all the way to Des Moines.
But it would be eliminating providers such as Planned Parenthood, which is in Ames and is closer than Des Moines.
Well, it doesn't eliminate them. They can still provide the services. We're just not spending, you know, federal and state tax dollars on it. That's all.
On what?
For Planned Parenthood. We're
but
still,
Planned Parenthood is providing those services. Why aren't they able to provide those services?
We're not eliminating their ability to provide those services. We're just going to spend some state money so those same type of services can be provided in locations all over the state, instead of in a dozen or two locations. They could be provided at maybe 100 or 200 different locations around the state.
But you're eliminating a provider that provides those from receiving public funds.
Okay.
Representative Hedges, would you like to weigh in?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the Senate had a hearing on it. I'm over in the House, so I certainly heard about it and heard all the people that were down there. I think they ended up having close to 600 people that were down there wanting to make sure that we protected access for women's health care. Certainly, we want to have access throughout the state, and Planned Parenthood has provided a good service for women. Additionally, as was stated, it's a 90-10 match. State puts up 10%, the feds give us 90% funding. So you're looking at a huge amount of dollars that are coming in to provide that health care. We're going to have to take it from somewhere else in the budget to fund it, if we're going to defund it. Additionally, if you're going to have a different type of family planning network, it's how is that going to work? I mean, I already look at the privatization of Medicaid and how the administrative costs have gone up from 4% to 15%. How is that going to work with a whole new structure? Where is the payment mechanism going to go through? I don't think that has been thought out by the majority party at all. And I think it's going to cause a bigger debacle than our Medicaid program is.
You're quite correct. What the Republicans are proposing would cause a tenfold increase in the cost of providing family planning services. It would also deny funds to the organization that does more to provide family planning services across the state than any other. Now, what they're proposing to do is to replace the funds by scooping other funds out of a different grant program that provides funding to foster care and other social services. You know, I met with the AMP Youth, the Achieving Maximum Potential. That's an organization of kids who have been in foster care and advocate for kids coming through foster care. Talked to them about this last week. They're hit on all sides. The money is going to be cut for foster care. What do they tell their youth coming out of foster care? They tell them, go to Planned Parenthood, get long-acting birth control so that you have a chance to finish your education, to get into a stable family situation so that you can have kids when you can provide for them the way you haven't been provided in your own life. So this is really outrageous. The so-called subcommittee meeting in the Senate, more than 400 people, maybe it was 600, I didn't count them. I had a hard time getting to my office. There were so many people in the Senate chamber. 26 minutes of subcommittee meeting to hear from 400 people. That was an outrage. And I'm afraid that they're going to try to do the same kind of thing, stifling public debate in dealing with the allowable growth. I hope not. I hope they will learn from their mistake.
Those were local lawmakers who attended the local League of Women Voters legislative wake-up event in Nevada this past weekend, discussing Senate File 2. The bill that would defund Planned Parenthood or, as Janet Peterson says, would gut Iowa's Family Planning Network program. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio with hosts myself, Greta Anderson, and Susan Franzen. Hi, Susan.
Hello, Greta. Good to be here.
And in the studio with us is Victoria Shapinski, an activist from Ames who was at the State House yesterday wearing pink, I presume.
Yes, I own a lot of pink, it turns out.
and I
wore it all.
And this is when Senate File 2 came before the full Judiciary Committee of 13 people. Tell us about the scene there and what happened, Victoria.
Well, the State House was packed. I saw all of our representatives who we just heard speak in the clip that you played. A number of people wearing pink, and in addition, I was wearing my ray gun shirt that said, better than unplanned parenthood. My commentary before I go into details would be that we're definitely being sold a bill of goods, and this is something we need to all be very concerned about. It's about health care and diminishing the access to health care for a large majority of our population. We went into the room early, the committee room, where the Judiciary Committee was going to be meeting. So all of us in pink were able to fill the room. We had a presentation from a very articulate presentation that was given by Janet Peterson. When the committee came in, chaired by Brad Zahn, we were all asked to leave the room because the Republicans wanted to caucus. That was a ploy to get us out of the room and then to make sure that other individuals who were representing a different perspective were able to crowd the doors and come back in when the committee reconvened. But since then, I've heard, and I certainly need to get this clarified, and I haven't had sufficient time, seeing this was just yesterday, but as people were filing out, in fact, Liz Mathis said to me, this is highly unusual that we're being asked to leave, because usually when the Republicans go to caucus or any, you know, or the Democrats, they're the ones who leave the room. Mm-hmm. So since then, last night I spoke to a couple lawyer friends who said, no, that should not have happened. We should have stood our ground and we should have stayed in that room. So there's some strategizing and playing going on.
Right. So the kind of thing that both Herman and Janet Peterson were talking about. So you had an opportunity to hear directly from the originator of this bill, Amy Sinclair.
Yes. Yes.
What did she say?
She said a lot. And I think, you know, from my perspective, it was very concerning. There's this idea being presented that somehow more services are going to be available. And to me, it very much parallels what we see going on at a federal level, the idea that we get rid of the ACA. But there's no, let's get rid of what we have, but there's no plan in place of how that's going to be, what's going to provide services for people. And to get rid of Planned Parenthood in Ames, which is already providing services, it doesn't make sense. And we don't know where those places are. And I just heard in your clip that Mr. Dio was talking about Zaring. I don't know what's in Zaring. I don't believe that there are any clinics there. And we don't have those other places in Ames that I'm aware of to replace the services that are being offered. And I think we get so caught up in this thing about abortion, and that, you know, that is 2.5% of what is offered through Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood is about family planning. It's about cancer screenings. It's about contraceptions. And there's, to me, the largest irony is to be creating barriers to contraception, which it has the probability of increasing unwanted pregnancies.
Yeah, yeah. The 2.5%, I believe, is the in terms of the number of procedures performed or visits that, you know, the abortion visits are 2.5 of the total visits made. I know that folks on the other side have also referenced the revenue, that Planned Parenthood does get more revenue from abortion. That takes up a bigger chunk of the pie if you look at it that way.
And all that comes from private fundraising.
From private fundraising,
yeah.
Exactly.
Other services come from both the state and federal dollars through Medicaid.
Would you just say what some of those are? Representative Dio talked about birth control pills and things like that. Now, what are the other services?
STDs you can be checked for, cancer, a variety of gynecological services, a lot of the main things that you would go to your gynecologist for.
And even prenatal care. Is that right or not?
I don't believe that there is a lot of prenatal care, that is something that is offered through other, like Mary Greeley and other places offer those sorts of services.
And would you just spell out what STDs are? This may not be a common acronym to some of our listeners.
Sexually transmitted diseases. And I am not an expert. I am not on the Planned Parenthood board or an expert. But I am, as a young woman, I was a client of Planned Parenthood. Yeah. And I know many other women like myself. I mean, I'm 60 now, but it's been around for a long time, and it's been providing good care and good services.
It also provides education. I happened to hear a presentation on STDs, and there were several that I had never heard of that are serious in creating infertility. And so, ironically, you could the health dangers from not having this education are significant.
Sure, sure. And Planned Parenthood has always been that welcoming place for anyone to go for information, for health care. It's safe, it's private, and that's very important.
Yeah. Could you just describe for us, you said that you were sort of displaced by your counterparts from the other side of the debate. Could you describe, you are all wearing pink. What were they wearing?
They were wearing black, many of them with T-shirts that had Christian messages. They were actually standing outside that group singing hymns while the rest of us were in the committee room. I don't go down to the State House very often, so it was I'm not sure if this is a normal, activity, but it was uncomfortable.
Were they men or women?
It was everybody, but there were a lot of men. And what was interesting is I had a front row seat when I first came into the committee room, and then when I was displaced, I stuck close to the door, but there was a lot of shoving going on. I wish I'd only had a T-shirt on and not a sweater because it was getting really warm. I mean, we were packed next to each other because they were trying to shove the others past us so that they could be the first ones back into the room, which they accomplished. So that was unfortunate.
And it's been noted, I think, Janet Peterson, the senator we heard from at the beginning of the segment, that said that of the in the Des Moines Register, she noted that there are 29 Senate Republicans. All of the Senate Republicans are co-sponsoring this bill. And of those 29 Republicans, 28
are men, and none of them have any medical education or background. And none of them at this point are changing. So the 29 out of who are supporting this bill, which will probably go to the Senate floor on Thursday, to a group that are 50. So you can do the math.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us, Victoria Shapinski from Ames.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
And I would like to add that we did invite Amy Sinclair, who is I think she wrote the bill, and she was unable to be with us today.
As a transition, we'll hear a little bit more from the Women's March in Washington. Stay tuned to Local Talk.
We will not allow our bodies to be owned and controlled by men in government or men anywhere for that matter. We will not allow our compassionate souls to get stepped on. We want the best for all Americans. No hate, no bigotry, no Muslim registry. We will continue to rise until our voices are heard, until our planet's safety is not deferred, until our bombs stop dropping in other lands, until our dollar is the same dollar as a man's. And we continue to recognize that, yes, we can. Until everyone respects Mother Energy, and everyone with a belly button must agree. So I need you to repeat after me. We are here.
We are here.
We're on fire.
We're on fire.
Living in a world.
Living in a world.
That's on fire.
Feet on the ground,
not backing down.
Feet on the ground,
not backing down. This girl is on fire.
was Alicia Keys singing at the Women's March in Washington. And now back to the surrounding counties. We have a couple of theater productions opening this. Well, one is opening this weekend, and that is The Fantastics in Ankeny. But first, we'd like to hear from Christopher Levi and Jim Reardon, two actors from Plaza Suite, the dinner theater production of the Boone Community Theater. And later, the once-in-a-lifetime chance, perhaps, to meet Tom P. Florick, co-star of KHOI's weekly Tom and Doug show. And he's here with Doug. He's here from Princeton, New Jersey, and will be entertaining us later. But first, we need to cover the theater beat.
I'm the president of Boone Community Theater, Christopher Levi of Ogden. I'm also in Act 3. I'm the father of the bride.
And hi, I'm Jim Reardon, and I'm in Act 2. Of Plaza Suite, which I play a famous Hollywood producer.
We're still working on lines, of course. That's the thing that everybody notices.
Yeah.
You know, we try to work on characterization and blocking and all kinds of other things. But boy, it's the lines that dominate our worries.
How did you happen to choose a Plaza Suite? It's, of course, very, very well known. You had there's been a movie, maybe more than one, and TV, and so lots of famous actors have and actresses have taken these roles. So was that at all intimidating?
We try not to get intimidated at Boone Community Theater over much, but there's a committee, John Hoffman of Boone, Susan Herrick of Boone, and Kelly Julesgaard of Ames are this committee that decide the show for the year. So as a president, I actually don't make that decision. That committee does that, brings it to the board. I think they chose Neil Simon because we've had some good success with Neil. He's a well-known playwright, and we like that. He's funny. He's very approachable. I think our audiences dig it. And it's also a bit romantic for that Valentine's season.
Mm-hmm. Right. Very true. There's a lot of good humor in these acts, but it's subtle. Neil Simon's humor is often pretty subtle, so that's why it's more important than ever for us to get our lines learned so that we can get our timing down on how to do certain things, you know, so that we'll be more fun for the audience.
Did you have any trouble casting it?
No, we actually haven't had trouble casting. It's, you know, a director's nightmare. Will enough people show up? We've been very successful, I guess. Folks seem to always show up and give us just enough or extra. So we had a lovely crowd for auditions, and we were able to pick, not we, I wasn't the director, pick from the pick of the litter. So obviously Jim got a part in Act 2, and I got a part in Act 3. So
I don't feel like this is all pretty new for me, but I haven't been involved in any plays since high school, which is a very long time ago now. So,
why did you try out?
Just because I thought it would be fun to do something like this in my retirement years, you know. So,
well, you're not retired, are you?
Oh, yes. Yes, I am. Trust me, I'm old enough.
Jim was our Father Christmas in Narnia, which I co-directed with Stephanie Hammer of Beaver. And so that was Father Christmas in the last show. So a bit of a character switch, so no typecasting for Jim.
<That's right.
laughs> So have you been in a lot of productions?
I have been in a handful here for about the last 2 or 3 years in Boone Community Theater. I had been in a bunch in college, but then I took some time off to start a family and get the first one out on his own, and so I'm kind of back into acting and directing, and I do a lot of set design as well, so I keep busy, and I enjoy it. Let's see, my first deal with Boone Community Theater was actually directing Voice of the Prairie, a show that debuted, oh my, some time ago when I was in college in Minneapolis, and so we brought it to Boone, Voice of the Prairie. So then I actually was in a couple of others. I was the crazy neighbor upstairs in Barefoot in the Park, Victor Velasco. I directed Agatha Christie's Cards on the Table. And then I actually do some producing or directing with the homeschool group in Boone. So I've been involved there, and we've done several of those productions here in this house, but where it's a separate company. So I guess I enjoyed theater enough that once I got started, I couldn't say no. And maybe that's what you're doing, Jim, is it was so fun. You're back in.
Right.
In for another?
But it's fun. I will say it's fun if I can get my lines finally down pat before opening night.
That was Christopher Levi and Jim Reardon, the two actors from Plaza Suite in Boone, which will be opening next weekend. But if you want to go to the dinner theater, you need to get your tickets requests in. The quickest way to do that is just to Google Boone Community Theater. I just want to give a little plug. My husband was watching the rehearsal while I was talking to the actors, and he was very impressed with the acting in Act One. And so,
and he's a tough critic.
Oh, well, he is also a big fan of community theater.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio.
Yes, and we were planning to talk with Thatcher Williams, the director of the Fantastics in the Ankeny Community Theater, which will be opening this weekend and will play three performances each weekend, 7:30 on Fridays and Saturdays and 2 o'clock on Sunday. And I just wanted to let people know, if you didn't, something I was amazed to find out, the Fantastics is the longest-running musical on Broadway. It ran from 1960 to 2002. And there's a revival on Broadway this year, so I think that may have something to do with why the Ankeny Community Theater took it on. So you don't have to go to Broadway. If you just can't make it, you can go down to Ankeny. we have some live performers in our studio.
Are you alive? I hope I'm alive.
And they now you are playing though as not with just your stage names. You're not just Tom and Doug. You are.
Oh, I'm Tom Flark. Yes.
And I'm Doug Gentile.
Yeah.
And we are here on KHOI on Saturday mornings and Monday evenings as the Tom and Doug Show.
Yes.
But coming
here
up,
is a kind of relative fuzzy word.
On your radio dial.
Yeah, you're listening on your ears right now.
On your ears.
But,
but Tom is here.
I'm here in this chair now. I'm in a chair right
He's
now.
He's being here now.
Yes.
Yes, and you came all the way from, is that
from
right?
From New Jersey, yes. I came from New Jersey. I wind up here every now and then, and I'm here now.
Yeah. So we do our weekly show through the magic of radio.
Yes.
Because Tom does not live here in Story County.
As far as I know.
But you are sitting here with a real instrument now.
Yes.
Doug came in with an instrument last week, but it doesn't look as serious as this. This is a...
His has to get checked out by TSA when he travels.
Yes.
Right. His is a very, dangerous. Very handsome accordion.
Yes. It's actually a child's accordion because it fits well in my backpack, and I get to walk around town with it and don't have to
And that way
myself.
No one bullies him because they know he's got a weapon.
Right.
No, because, you know, you wear those backpacks and they'll think you got a bomb. And I said, no, it's worse than that. It's an accordion.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and they let you on the plane with that? Or?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, you get to sit on the plane. Actually, to be honest, the plane that goes from Newark to Des Moines is small enough that you have to gate check it. So, but they say that they let it on the plane.
But then they take it away
they
from
take
it
away from you.
They know. When you see a guy with an accordion, you know what's coming.
That's right.
Well, actually, in Ames, we have an accordion group. We have some real big accordion fans.
Oh, so that's great.
I hope they're listening.
So this is where they are. That's very nice.
So we're here also to talk about this coming weekend.
Yes.
There's a rare opportunity not only to see Tom and Doug live performing here in Ames, but a tremendous amount of great local talent. So Clark Ford has put together this Laugh Out Loud show that's playing two times this Friday night at 7:30 at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Ames. And then Sunday, that's not at 7:30. That's at, 2 o'clock in the afternoon at the Unity Church in downtown Ames as well.
So don't watch that Super Bowl.
Well,
come
the
on
Super
down.
Bowl is like, you know.
You know what's going to happen. You know Atlanta's going to win anyway.
But it starts at like 7.
Yeah.
So this is what you do. You know, you don't need to watch the pre-game show. You can come to our show and then still see the pregame.
That's
and
right.
And then still see, you know, the Super Bowl if that's your thing.
Yes.
Well, I know that you didn't bring these instruments just so we could see how nice they look.
No, they're good to get chicks.
Okay. Well, we're not saying your address is over the phone.
Well, you could say our number, 292-2878.
Call us. Make a request to Tom and Doug.
Well, would you like to hear a song?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you want this one?
Yeah, that's the one that you have in front of
us. All right.
Okay.
I can speak to you. You can speak to me. I gotta leave on the television or I'll never ever get to sleep. Something about TV news feels like love to me. I see disasters, I see lives get ruined, but it always seems to work out fine just as long as I stay tuned. Something about TV news feels like love to me. It's such a friendly voice and a friendly word. And as long as I've got cable, I can let my voice be heard. Yes, there are problems out there. Serious things go wrong. But it's nice to know which sponsors have acquired my favorite songs. It feels like love to me. Feels like love to me. I prayed to Tom Brokaw that the Gulf War would soon end. And my prayers were answered, even though he's such a busy man. This is my life. It feels like love to me. So I pray to Oprah Winfrey that my life might soon be saved. And I pray to the omnipotent Gene Shea that my crappy records might get played. This is my life. It feels like love to me. I was thinking just the other day, as I was watching them explain what the president had meant to say. If I said I loved you on the radio, well then 100,000 people, well they'd know it's so, they'd know it's so. This is my life. It feels like love to me. Yes, if I said I love you on the radio.
KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames and surrounding community. Well then 200,000 people, well they'd know it's so, they'd know it's so. This is my life. It feels like love to me.
Is that an original song?
It's an Aboriginal song, yes.
So that's the beauty of community radio, is that, you know, it feels like love.
Yes.
It brings us all together.
Well, all of television is like that. You know, I think we discovered that sometimes we watch television just to make us feel better, feel less alone.
But the funny thing is, the more you watch it, especially the news, the more anxious you get.
Yeah.
But then, of course, it tells you, well, you know, knowledge is power, so you need to watch more so that you feel in control. And then the more you watch, the less control you feel. And so then you have – so it's a little addiction cycle that's they've got going on.
Well, doesn't don't the commercials serve the purpose of telling you what you can buy to make you feel better?
That's always good.
But also it's like the TV shows, like they present a problem in the first part of the hour and then they solve it, you know. The first, you know, or maybe like if you're watching like Columbo, it might take 2 hours.
Well, I wish that we could solve the problems on the radio, but we haven't. We can't quite manage that.
No.
Except when you have a really heavy first half of the hour, then you can switch to something lighter and entertaining for the last half of the hour.
Well, we've been trying to take a few pounds off, so we're trying to be lighter. Yes.
Yeah. It's that the New Year's
resolution.
Okay.
Now, some of the things you were saying, Doug, actually relate to your profession as someone who looks at the effects of television on people.
Mm-hmm.
And but I was wondering what Tom, what your profession is.
Yeah, what do you do?
You know, I actually I work for Educational Testing Service, the company that makes the SAT exam. So I work in the research area.
So everyone hates him.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of nice.
It's a nice campus they have out there. ETS.
Yeah. So every high school senior, probably some high school juniors, are stressed out because of what you do.
Well, to be honest with you, I work mostly on TOEFL, Test of English as a Foreign Language. So the people who dislike me are probably living, you know, in various countries all over the world.
And they're no longer allowed to get into the country.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's going to hurt.
Now, this current political climate we're in, you know, is, how should I say, rife for humor?
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, sometimes you gotta laugh at it.
Tragedy and humor are very close.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
You always say that the best humor speaks a kind of truth.
Yeah, I always say that a joke, humor itself, is voicing an unspoken truth. The best jokes are things that we already know, and when you speak them, that's funny. So that's sort of what I find the best humor is like.
Mm-hmm. And you've written this song, you know, thinking about the culture of the Supreme Court and the media culture of celebrity and what it takes to tear people down or make a cogent argument in today's climate. Do you want to tell us about this song?
Yeah, well, it turns out that a friend of mine went to grammar school with Supreme Court Justice Sam Alito, who was from New Jersey. And so I was imagining that, and I was thinking, well, gee, what would it be like to have known Supreme Court Justice in second grade? And so we kind of wrote this song, semi-imagining what it's like. Truth is truth, short or tall. I used to think the truth couldn't change at all, but that was how it used to be, but not today. Because the truth is that not the truth until the Supreme Court has its say. The Supreme Court's got some crazy fools, self-absorbed losers and corporate tools, but that's not what this song's about or how it goes. Because the truth is that I once saw Sam Alito pick his nose. It was in second grade at the end of lunch. I was finishing off my Nestle's Crunch. He must have thought the coast was clear, I suppose. And I'm just telling you about the day I saw Sam Alito pick his nose. And now he's a big celebrity, making stupid rules for you and me, envisioning a world that's sharply divided, writing up stupid decisions like Citizens United. Now I'm up here on this little stage, and Sam's pretending he's a legal sage, with his judge ideas percolating inside his robes. And I just told you about the day I saw Sam Alito pick his nose.
Yes, I just told you about the day I saw Sam Alito
pick his nose.
Thank you, Tom and Doug.
Really timely, too.
Well, you know, it's about time that people really think about our noses in that way.
And, well, yeah, and how can you ever take anything he says seriously now that you know that
in second grade,
you know, expose?
Yeah.
We'll have to see what we can dig up on this new one, Neil Gorsuch. Oh, my goodness. So, once again, your performance will be this weekend.
Weekend, two of them. There's one on Friday at 7:30, and then there's one on Saturday. Sunday.
Sunday at 2 o'clock.
You've got Saturday off.
Saturday, you can come hang out with us. That's okay. Actually, we'll be here probably.
Well, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Tom Florek coming all the way from New Jersey.
Yes.
Yeah, just for this event here that's going to feature about 19 people, just tremendous local talent we have here in the community.
Writing their own scripts, performing their own stuff.
Yeah, we've got skits and songs, and it's kind of in the style of Laugh-In.
We're Rowan and Martin, so that'll be interesting. I've never done that before.
And on Saturday night, you can go out to Boone or to Ankeny and see Plaza Suite or the Fantastics.
That's right.
So now it is time to say you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Susan Franzen and Greta Anderson. Voices you heard were State Representative Dave Dio, Lisa Heddens, State Senator Herman Quirnbach, Janet Peterson, and Victoria Shapinski. And in the second half of the program, we would like to have heard from Thatcher Williams. We're sorry that our phone didn't go through. But we did hear from Christopher Levi and Jim Reardon. And, of course, Tom Florek and Doug Gentile. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and at 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. And then you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all our show postings in your newsfeed. Local Talk was engineered by Greta Anderson.
Yes. Go, Greta, go.
Yes, doing double duty as co-host and producer. She brought a lot of the material in for the first part of our show. And our theme song, as ever, is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was
Alicia Keys doing This Girl's on Fire.
Okay.
And we heard a couple songs by Tom and Doug.
Yeah, TV News Feels Like Love and Sam Alito.
Yep.
Yes.
And the booger song.
The Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.
Woo!
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.